Good morning, everyone. I'd love to say I'm the VP of Fastly. That sounds amazing, but just SRE. I don't have the rest of it yet. So I'm going to talk today. It's probably going to be about 30 minutes overview, because that's all you need to know about being on call. No, there's too much to talk about around incident management. So it's going to be fairly, overall. There's a lot of detail that we could go into. So we'll have time, maybe 15 minutes, for Q&A afterwards. So feel free to save your questions until then. And I'm always, I can talk forever about this topic, so feel free to ask me questions about tools that I'm not going to go into a lot of detail today. So I want to credit this talk, which I've been doing for about the last year, each time a little bit better, I hope, to our director, actually VP of Security, Martin Van Horenbeck, and our VP of Infrastructure, Tom Daly. We put this talk together about a year ago, and I've kind of morphed it to be SRE-specific, because incident management at Fastly is something that involves everybody at the company. It's not something that's just SRE-focused. So we've done talks together. Our styles are so completely different, though. It's a very awkward talk, so I think we don't do it together as much anymore. So first, about Fastly. Every time I do this talk, I get to update this slide, which is awesome. I think when I started, we were under 30 POPs around the world. And Fastly is a edge cloud platform, content delivery network. Who here is a Fastly customer or familiar with Fastly? OK, pretty good. We are all over the world, have a network capacity right now of 15 terabits per second, although increasing. Like I said, 5 continents, 43 POPs, all very exciting. It grows all the time. I think we're more than 15, but I haven't checked in the last week while I've been here. Individual cache servers, which are in our POPs, just real quick by the numbers. As of a few weeks ago, we're actually 100 gig in our POPs now, but these are individual cache servers. And so we actually are able to manage a large content network with not as many servers as you'd expect. Now about me, my background, why I'm here. 20 years ago, I started being a systems administrator. And since then, I've done DBA, director of NOC, you name it, I've done it on call basically most of the time, because I believe actually that most people should be on call. I'm on call right now. I'm hoping, I should mention real quick, if you are a Fastly customer, it's possible there might be an incident while I'm standing up here, because my rate right now of having incidents during talks is pretty high. We now have it as a calendar event in my team when I'm giving this talk. So I started out working in ISP systems administration track, because that's what you did 20 years ago, and worked at LiveJournal. Was on the team that developed Memcached, and then moved on to eventually running databases for Twitter. And one of my first jobs at Twitter was actually to kill the fail whale. So that was very exciting, and I got a ton of experience there. I've been at Fastly for 2 years now, and that's, I would say, more exciting and more fun than some of the other work that I've done, which says quite a lot. I also get more sleep than I used to. So, I'm going to talk to you about incident management, but at first, a story from holidays last year. I was taking a plane to Cincinnati in the US and woke up from a nice sleep to this scene in my plane. I was in the front of the plane, and I heard the words, "Lisa, wake up. The cabin is full of smoke." And being on call for 20 years, I instantly was like awake and ready and like in like mode, like, okay, my shoes are on, I've got everything, I know what to do, I know where the emergency exit is, and now I can do nothing but wait. But what an amazing opportunity to watch incident management in another field take place, because these people who are the flight attendants, normally flying the plane, bringing me alcohol, they are, that's their normal job, right? And now, in a span of seconds, they've got to turn into the people that might be saving my life. And it happened so quickly. My head's down in the emergency landing, you know, the crash position you have to do. I'm down there, and I'm just like, what's going on right now? There's people at ground control, there's the people who are, you know, the air traffic control. They've got a whole system of things going on. By the time we landed, it was all over in like a minute. We landed, there was a fire engine at the gate, never booked it so fast to the gate before, and like nobody was in our way. Everybody was calm. Turns out if the whole plane is in that position, you can't look around and like panic and start screaming. So I figured out that's the reason why your head's down there. And I also noted there wasn't like a group of people sitting on the plane whose job it was to just hang out and wait for something to happen so that they could be the ones that then told the pilot or air traffic control. And that's actually what it's like for us in this industry when we as engineers are responsible for managing services, right? We all have our regular jobs, we're very good at them, we're all experts. But in an incident, we suddenly need to switch into this mode of making sure that our customers and our coworkers are relaxed, comfortable, and that no one dies. So I finished this, you know, we landed safely, I didn't die, and I've never been happier for any crew, and like I'm a happy Delta customer, which is strange, just because of this incident. So incident management for me and for Fastly isn't just about like make sure that the service always works or make sure that we just fixed it. It's also about thinking about the impact to customers, the impact to whoever your customers are. Because it's not enough just to land that plane safely, which I'm very glad for. It's also the case that you have to keep people calm. You've got to communicate, and you've got to be trained to make sure that when it does happen, because it will happen, you're able to act like you know what you're doing. It turns out this was just like an air conditioner, by the way, so it's a lot more dramatic than what it actually was. But I didn't know that at the time. It could have been much more scary. So fortunately, in my day job, I don't have to save anyone's life. However, and there aren't things generally catching fire, although that has happened, but I've just jinxed it. It's happened several times. Who's had a data center fire? Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it still happens as often as it used to. But these are the things going on the internet every day, and these are the things that we all are dealing with, and they're never gonna stop. So that's obviously like the first rule that I always apply. Like if something horrible can happen, it will probably happen at some point. And that's the number one thing to keep in mind. Our customers, while our service, while Fastly isn't responsible for somebody's life, there's a lot of people who rely on our service. A lot of our customers, like the New York Times, if you are on the internet on a daily basis, you're hitting a Fastly service at some point. So it can be critical in a global emergency to get access to news or to get access to, for example, on Twitter, to get where a few seconds could be life or death. Or it could be something as simple as the Super Bowl in the US, where our customers who have commercials playing during them, a few seconds cost a lot of money. So those few seconds actually mean a lot for us, and that's why we've built this incident management system. This was my latest idea that I have about when I think about incident management and what it's like in the sort of ops community, is specifically never turn your back on the ocean. That's how I feel about the internet. And so I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but if you're running your systems in any way where you're assuming that they just work, or like, we're not gonna deal with that again, that's the wrong way to think about it. You should always be watching out for sneaker waves. So a few years ago, before we had an incident management system, these kinds of things would happen on the internet, DDoSes. Did folks participate or work during the DNS DDoS last year? Anyone? Yeah. That was my second of the two major DNS DDoSes that I got to work, the one from 2006. Anyone? 2006? No, I'm too old. back then, a few years ago, before Fastly had this incident management system, and I think what I've seen historically is that oftentimes the whole idea of setting up a process around this is the last thing you'll think about. There's the dog pile, there's everyone in a room at once kind of trying to figure out what's happening, who do we need to tell. So as we thought about, like, what are we going to focus on? Like, we know everything breaks. We know there's DDoSes. We know there's fires in data centers. What's the thing that's going to be, like, our central perspective? And what that is the customer impact. So you know things are going to break. How does that impact your customer? Because on the internet, if you treat everything that breaks as an incident, then you're literally going to be dealing with incidents constantly, which will cause fatigue, will cause burnout, cause, you know, PTSD, and you end up losing people in your company. So the first thing I did was always say, and I do this in every incident, what's the impact? Because if it's like, oh my God, this service is really important, or oh my, because it's my baby and I want this service to run, you don't need to wake people up for that if it's not actually impacting customers. Ideally, all of your systems are resilient and fault-tolerant, and nothing ever breaks that impacts a customer. I get it. It's the Google way. But the reality is things are breaking all the time. And typically, I've seen the measure be, we've been working on this for too long. Therefore, or this has been broken for a while, nobody's paying attention, let's call an incident. That's the worst thing to do with a group of engineers who are on call. If it's not actively breaking, just like when you set up your alerting system, if it's not actively breaking something, you don't need to have everybody come into and get all excited about an incident. So develop your definitions of the impact. And this is where, while I'm not like super into the ITIL method, I did actually borrow from that because I think they've already done it. They've already, like, the SEVs and all that stuff. That's done. Don't recreate that. But make sure you do have something in place, that framework for what's the severity. After you've got that sort of understanding of impact, is the service down entirely? Is it degraded? Is it totally fine? Then, according to that, you can go, okay, if it's a sub one, if it's a sub two, what's my expectations for an engineer to respond? From that, and how do I communicate this to our customers? And let's see, there was an Amazon outage, the S3 outage. Was it this year or last year? Last year? It's been too long of a year. The S3 outage was obviously a big deal on the internet. However, it didn't necessarily impact Fastly internally, like for our own use. However, we knew many of our customers were impacted. In that case, we actually declared it an incident. Nothing was breaking at Fastly. But the impact of that outage was gigantic, and we saw that, right? Because a lot of folks have origins configured in S3, so we're seeing it in all our monitoring systems. We engage the IC, we call it the IC, the Incident Command Program, and we actually had our status updated, telling customers about it 40 minutes before Amazon did. So that's an example of, it's not my problem necessarily, but it's impacting my customers. So, the framework allowed us to get that whole like method going and, like I said, updated before them. Here's an example of severity levels. If people want to copy it, you're happy to. Ours is entirely about what the impact is. Is it how many, we can obviously lose multiple POPs and not have it impact customers so severely. If there's something in an entire region. There was an outage. Actually, our CEO got up in front of, at our customer conference and did a postmortem in front of everyone about an outage we had a few months ago. And in that one, we actually inadvertently sent a lot of our US traffic to one POP in Tokyo. That's not the best thing to do, just so you know. Yes, we can perform with many POPs down. However, sending all of our traffic to one POP, like, that's a whole different situation. So in that case, that was up there at the Sev 1, Sev 0 level. It was a pretty big deal. It happened the day before our customer conference, which is the reason why he got up and did our postmortem, which was very exciting. So this gives you a common vocabulary and also helps to narrow the scope. Once again, if you do not have this, then you have executives, managers, crazy individual, or individual, very excited engineers deciding how important an incident is, and you do not want that. Leaving it to individual engineers without this kind of a vocabulary means that you're lacking that kind of communication from executive level on down. And the best thing you can do as an engineer is make sure your executives think that you've got everything underhand, controlled. This works really well for that. One thing I'll say about this, most of our incidents are actually in the Sev 3 category, and we treat them, we do the same process, we do the same postmortem communication, review, remediation for Sev 3s. What we've seen over time since we introduced this is a lot more incidents, like, through the program, like, defined. Like, I report this every 2 weeks to the whole executive team. And over time, like, we actually, it seems like we have more incidents. That's actually not true. We're having smaller and smaller incidents that we do remediation on so that we don't have as many Sev 2s and Sev 1s. And you'll see that once you get this going over time. So, what's another reason why I think, other than communicating with executives, it's great to have something like this? It's actually because of the people. The primary reason that I believe so strongly in having some process around incident management that's run by individuals in the company, individual contributors as well as managers, is that we're human. Without this kind of a framework, like I said, you end up getting paged and called all times of the day and night. You end up with people going, hey, how big of a deal was this? Did anyone, and you get the whole, like, engineers who want to save the day and they work 48 hours in a row. So with an incident program, you want to focus on making sure you're getting the right people engaged at the right time. In our case, the idea is you figure out the scope, you understand the impact, and you only engage the people who need to be engaged. That being said, we also have a very transparent process, so anyone in the company can participate. Anyone in the company can watch, I should say. More about that in a minute. You can't expect engineers to work 24/7, right? And if you aren't running with an actual process or an on-call system, you're implicitly asking your engineers to be on call. So at Fastly, almost all engineers are on call. And the ones who aren't officially on call, I think they actually have more stress than those of us who are on call. Because when I'm not on call, I can just hang out. It's great, because someone else is going to be dealing with it. Our engineers, all of our engineering teams, have their own rotation. So that means, I'll talk about why that this means we don't have a knock. So we're running 24/7, seconds matter, but we don't have a group of people sitting on that plane, like, hanging out, like, waiting to tell us what's going on in the company or with the service. And why, like, how can we do this? Again, almost every engineer, I should clarify, is on call. The engineers we have are globally distributed. So my team, I think we have 28 people in the SRE group right now, and that is over 5 continents, more time zones than I think I just counted the other day, almost all the time zones. And also our developers are distributed. We have a very flexible remote culture, working from home culture, and that's awesome, because it means at any time, day or night, we also have a globally distributed customer support team. So that means any time, day or night, like there's someone very smart who's available to answer a question or to look into a problem if needed. We also enable anybody in the company to initiate an incident. So if we empower each of our customer support team is highly technical. So if they see a problem, they are empowered to escalate it and start and declare an incident. What else do I want to say about this one? Whoops. So we have like probably 7 different monitoring systems. I don't know, actually. Last time I counted, it was up there. There's probably also other shadow monitoring systems. Actually, there are. I know that for a fact. So instead of trying to force everyone to do the same thing, what we've done is essentially, this is another reason why we have this sort of one program that fits them all, which is you're empowered, like monitor your own service. If it breaks, we should know about it, the SRE team. You have your own on-call rotation. You're empowered. The idea is that you should be able to fix your own service. However, if it's causing impact to customers, it becomes part of this sort of centralized incident process. But I think for the most part, this works. Like, we have the blameless culture, of course, and it's not that easy to hide something that's impacting customers, because we'll hear about it from customers. So there's sort of this like idea that because we're so transparent about the fact that things break, if you don't kind of come forward and let us know if something's broken, like have your own monitoring system, but if you don't come forward and we get customer tickets, it's gonna go through this process and you're gonna feel really bad about yourself because we're all gonna see you. And like this kind of works, like we're nice, but also like we're not gonna like make fun of you to your face or anything like that. But if you are responsible for a service, it breaks, you don't tell anyone, your name's gonna come up on the next incident meeting. So this kind of system, while it could be, while it doesn't have like specific SLAs for APIs, we're not, like we have microservices, but we don't have a lot of that framework around it. This kind of culture of like, run your own thing will help you. And be involved when things break, mostly works. They're empowered to improve, they're invited to the incident meetings. So when we go through our postmortems, all the engineers that were responding are in that meeting. How does it actually work though? Like how can you have this decentralized thing when at the end of the day, you still want to have some consistency in how we deal with incidents. We have a role, the incident commander is, and this is borrowed, I should mention, from FEMA's incident management system. The incident commander is an on-call role that is shared with VPs, directors, managers in engineering, SRE, NetEng, developers, and customer support. So it's a shared rotation on call. So on top of your regular job, you may be doing this. I'm on this rotation. Thankfully, not right now. This is the person whose job it is to coordinate all these sort of decentralized engineers. They understand the severity. They understand the impact. They have a deep knowledge of the how all the different parts of our systems work. They have the trust from the organization. And ideally, it's just a communication coordination role. They're not on the keyboards hacking. They are empowered to ask others to get on the keyboard, and they're empowered to call people. So this is where the on-call rotations come in. I know that if this service is down, then I've got to reach out and page this group if they're not online already. Typically, they're already online. And that's where we're using things like PagerDuty to reach out to folks. I should mention, too, our incidents are coordinated currently in Slack. So this is a person who understands that impact. They're not saying, let's declare an incident because I feel like I don't understand what's going on right now. That is like the biggest thing to avoid. You're the person who's the incident commander, it feels very powerful, and you start going, oh my God, I think something's broken and I don't know, and I just don't know who to get, let's call an incident. That is the worst thing to do, don't ever do that. You're clear and you're calm, and you, if you don't know the answer to who is fixing something right now, your job is to keep calling until you get, so when I'm an incident commander, I've reached out to someone, you're on call, do you know how to fix the system? No? Okay, who knows how to fix the system? I'm going to that person next. And that's actually difficult, I think, for an incident commander, because I think it can be easy to believe an engineer. So I think the other thing is to have trust, but verify someone's knowledge before moving on, or before giving them too much time. Another thing an incident commander can do is call moratorium on any other changes. You also are involved with communicating or making sure that we're updating our status to customers. Another important thing about incidents is making sure you know to say, this incident is over because it's no longer impacting people. Now let's move it on to the cleanup process. So we can keep going with like troubleshooting and debugging and getting to the root cause. But once it's like no longer impacting customers, shut it down. Like in our case, our Slack channel for incidents, I think there's like hundreds of people in there. And imagine if hundreds of people in the company every time you had an incident. So this is the trade-off with being transparent. We're transparent, anyone can join this and read what's going on. But imagine just having them sit there and watch engineers debug instead of working. So we shut it down and then move the debugging into the team channels. Another thing is this person who I want to mention real quick is helping to curate the conversation. So, for example, the what was the outage? I need to think about it. Hold on. It was the Dyne outage, I think. It was the S3 outage. The S3 outage was like obviously a big deal. Or maybe it was the DNS outage. It's on the news. You know, when an incident that you're working is on the front page of CNN, it's very exciting. So you get a lot of people in this transparent system asking to help or wanting to help. So one of the things that I think is really important as an incident commander is involve people, but be willing to tell them to stop talking or to go away in a nice way. And one of the ways that I do that is to actually get them doing something else. So like, hey, I love that you're helping. This is really useful. With the DNS outage that was impacting us as well, it was the case where, you know, all these people wanted to be involved. The DNS service was down, and we were in this situation where we didn't know when it would come back up. Like it could, you know, I remember the one from 2006, like it took several days. So I was like, okay, we're gonna divide and conquer. This group over here, your job is to go see what new DNS service we can get up and how quickly. This one over here is doing documentation and research and how we're gonna communicate to customers. I basically set up several other coordinated little incident groups and set time for us to come back. And that was a way to like get people engaged and focused. These volunteers had something to do, but weren't actually distracting us from the active impact to customers. The other thing about our process here is that we engage and include marketing, IT, business operations, security, HR, legal. So when we are writing up the FSA or we're doing communications, it's not just up to the engineers to do this. It's something where the incident commander can start the process, but we get this involvement. And each time we're thinking, what would I want to hear if I was the customer right now? Like, when in doubt, choose transparency. But like my perspective on what I want to tell customers is not necessarily the same perspective that our customer support team has. So we end up with like a more well-rounded FSA at the end. How we handle the continuous improvement part of incident management. or as I refer to it as, thank you, future self, the incidents are always going to happen. You don't end an incident and go, whew, I'm glad this is over. Like, that'll never happen again. No, of course it's going to happen again. So we log every incident. We use Jira for that. Every week, we have a meeting where we go through every incident. We involved each of the incident responders. And sometimes we do a security advisory, sometimes we do an FSA, and we talk about that after each of the incidents. When I say we, I mean the on-call responder and the incident commander, as well as, I mentioned, executives on all those other teams. And during that incident management meeting, we go through the five whys. And create essentially Jira tickets for what the mitigations are. How could we have found this better? How could we improve our monitoring? Obviously, how could we have it not impact customers as well? This is an overview of the essentially our process. We see an abnormality through one of our monitoring systems or from a customer, ideally not from a customer, but it turns out if you have customers who have really great real-time monitoring systems, they sometimes find things faster than we do. That one drives me crazy, but it's just a reality. So we page the incident commander, and at the same time, the engineers are getting paged too, right, for their own rotations. We start the incident, and this is the Slack channel. In that Slack channel, we identify the on-call responders and work on our mitigation, triage the patient, make sure it's not bleeding anymore. That's also where we decide what to communicate to customers, and this is how we can actually end up updating our status before customers notice. Then we end the incident, we say, okay, we fix it. It's no longer impacting folks, let's move the conversation, and we clearly designate what's the next Slack channel we're gonna go to. We do, that's where we work on, we've already logged in Jira that there's an incident, and then we also use Confluence Wiki for the longer incident report. We do our FSA, although we actually don't do those for most SEV3s, but if it's a really large, an FSA is a Fastly service advisory. And then, like I said, we've got that meeting, we keep going, the weekly meeting, and we go through and review on a regular basis. Exercises. Like, sometimes I like to say that every incident is like a game day, so we don't need to do a game day. But for, that's not the best way to run things. But for compliance reasons, and also just because it's a good idea, every quarter we do a regular, like, I like to call it like a role-playing session where we all get together in a room and play, don our hats of, you're the person who's on call for databases, you're the person who's on call for a control plane. And we actually go through and mock up how would we resolve an incident. Based on that, we actually go through the same process of just like it's a real incident. So we actually write up mitigations and prioritize those for us to fix based on the fake incident that we do. Other things that you have to do, every 3 months, people need to be reminded of stuff. We're basically children. So everything around like what's expected for you on call, how do you do the incident process? Those are trainings that we have. We have them online. And as people are onboarded, we'll take them through that as well. So that was very sort of high level, and I'm happy to answer questions, but just as a sort of overview, start with the basics, don't get too complicated. What I just showed you seems like, oh, easy. That's actually how easy it is. If you start to get too complicated in your tooling, if you think tools are gonna solve the things I just talked about, you're gonna forget about the people, and the people I think are the most important. Make sure you're focusing on empowering your engineers. Being on call is not actually a crime, and it's not the worst thing possible. It's actually a way to empower you to feel responsible for your service and also to not have to worry about it when you're not on call. If that's not true, if you have to be on call all the time, that's a separate issue. But I encourage you to talk with your management about how you're a human, you need to eat and sleep, and you're going to make poor decisions and not leave any time for creativity in your engineering if you're too busy being on call. Make sure you do those regular exercises. Partner with your other teams. Notice, like, the entire time I was talking here, it wasn't never just SRE. It's never just the systems or database people. It's everyone across the entire company, and I think that's critical. And then, you know, be open to what you learn from each incident. Just because you've been doing it for a while doesn't mean there is an opportunity for you to learn something new. And going through this process, you will actually learn a lot more about your systems. That's it for me. Thank you.